Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas is now in session pursuant to adjournment.
Thank you. Be seated. Court has three matters on its oral submission docket this morning. In the order in which they will be presented, they are KDF, Kansas Public Employees Retirement System, and Payholders and Associates, Inc. versus the Honorable James L. Rex, an original mandamus proceeding. Brad Stewart versus USA Custom Paint and Body Shop from Harris County, and First Bank and Sam J. Brown Trustee versus Tony's Tortilla Factory Incorporated and others from Harris County. The court will hear each of these arguments and take a brief recess in between each presentation. We will conclude the arguments before our noon break. The relators or petitioners may reserve a portion of the time allotted to them for rebuttal by so advising the marshal of the court. We are recording these arguments for the court's convenience. If you desire to listen to a tape of the argument, please apply with our clerk. Court is ready to hear from relators in KDF versus Rex.
Please, the court, Mr. Randall Rouse will present argument for the relators. They have reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Good morning. Randy Rouse on behalf of KDF, Kansas Public Employees Retirement System and PAC holder. Also with me at council table are Kevin Jackson and Joe Locke representing the same parties. We're here, Your Honors, on a petition for mandamus because Judge Rex from Andrews, Texas has refused to enforce the laws of the state of Kansas, a law, Your Honors, that does not violate the good morals, quote, the good morals, natural justice, and is not prejudicial to the general interest of the citizens of the state of Texas. We are here, Your Honor, to Your Honors, to ask that the court mandamus Judge Rex to enforce a mandatory venue provision that provides for a conditional government immunity for the state of Kansas. And we're here asking that comity be applied and that Judge Rex be forced to do this because he has abused his discretion. The background for the case I think would be helpful, and I'll try to keep that short, sweet, and to the point. The parties involved, the Kansas Public Retirement System is the retirement system of the state of Kansas that all public employees invest in, such as judges, such as teachers. All government employees are part of this system. KDF is a vehicle that, a partnership that has set up to hold assets for the public retirement system in other states and in its own state. And PAC holder is the investment advisor for the retirement system. Those are the three parties that are before the court. How we get to this point is that KDF invested in a company by the name of Hydrogen Energy Corporation. That is a Utah corporation. The transcript shows that the principal place of business at the relevant time period is in Kansas, although I think that the sheet that's been handed to you by opposing counsel indicates otherwise. The Hydrogen Energy Corporation, in essence, asked for a debenture at some point in time from the Kansas Public Retirement System to be placed with it. A $2.5 million debenture was put with the company. Also, KDF, as the custodian for CAFRS, has a 25% ownership of Hydrogen Energy Corporation. Texas Hydrogen Energy Corporation is a wholly owned subsidiary of Hydrogen Energy Corporation, and its purpose, that is a Texas corporation, its purpose was set up under the board of directors of the Hydrogen Energy Corporation to acquire assets in Andrews County, Texas.
Counsel, under your,
yes.
Are you asking for us to send merely the suit against the Kansas Public Employees Retirement System to Kansas, and can the case proceed in Texas against KDF and Payholder Associates without violating notions of comedy that you're arguing?
No, sir, I do not think that can happen for the reason that the Kansas statute says all actions that are directly or indirectly against the system shall be brought in Kansas. KDF and PAC holder are, in essence, agents of CAPRS. They also have entered into indemnity agreements with CAPRS, so any judgment that is rendered against those two entities really goes against the state of Kansas. So I don't see a way that this can be carved out except perhaps in an in rem situation. But the case is not even ripe for an in rem situation. And what I mean by that, sir, is that the plaintiffs brought this case under the guise of an injunction, under the guise of a declaratory judgment, under the guise of a declaratory judgment to determine the validity of certain loans and lien interests. All that we have in the record and all that had really transpired was that PAC holder had sent a letter demanding payment, and that if payment was not made, they would have to institute foreclosure proceedings. And the plaintiffs, in the very own pleading on the first page, talks about, quote, a threat that a foreclosure proceeding would be imminent. So we don't have a case where there's actually a foreclosure in process. We don't have a case where there is a, where CAPRS or KDF or PAC holder has sought action in the state court to enforce anything. We just have a letter demanding payment, and that's triggered this lawsuit.
Would it be different if KDF had initiated foreclosure proceedings in Texas State?
Very candidly, I think it might. And that's one of my concerns on the mandamus, is that if the suit proceeds, we will have to counterclaim. If the suit proceeds, we will have to try to enforce her note where we are seeking relief under the state of Texas. And we could have a waiver situation. And when that waiver, that's why mandamus is the vehicle, because we have no adequate remedy to appeal at all. Because once we start filing counterclaims against either third parties, once we file counterclaims on the note, once we file counterclaims to seek an enforcement, seek the Texas courts to enforce a lien interest, then that's when we have asked the state of Texas, we may have waived our immunity issue.
Well, suppose that CAPRS decides to foreclose. Don't they have to come back to Texas to foreclose?
I think that that may very well be the case. If they have to foreclose on the interest, I think we have to specifically look at the documents that are in this case. The documents, what we have is a note, and we have a security agreement, all executed in Kansas, all with the choice of law provision of Kansas, all that the transcript shows executed by the parties who lived in Kansas at that time, the chief executive officers of Kansas who lived in Kansas at that time. So the question is whether that security agreement, that if they foreclose on notes and that type of thing, whether the status of that would be in Kansas. But if, to answer specifically your question, if they have to come and foreclose on a real estate interest, KDF might very well have to come to Texas. But they've chosen not to do that at this stage. And this case was brought against them, in essence, to restrain a foreclosure that is not even in process.
Is that something that weighs on the trial court's discretion in this comity issue?
No, sir.
The fact that CAPRS has the power to seek foreclosure and therefore complete relief, all the issues being all litigated, couldn't happen except but in a Texas court, because foreclosure is one of those rights that CAPRS could assert in these transactions.
To answer that question is no, I think he did abuse his discretion. From this standpoint, the comity case that we are relying on is the Lee versus Miller case, which is a Fifth Circuit case, because they could not find a Texas case on point on the government immunity issue. But that case refers back to a Supreme Court case, McElroy versus McElroy, which was a divorce case out of Oklahoma. And in that case, Your Honor, they were talking about property in Texas. And the Texas Supreme Court at that stage said that, you know, we're not talking about an issue where you actually have the in rem action present before us. We are talking about an action where one party and the other party are in another state, and one party is ordering the other party to do certain things with the property. You see the distinction with the property, a personal order, as opposed to an actual in rem acting against the state property of Texas. That's why it is not a violation of our public policy for a case such as this to be tried in Kansas. It is not against our public policy, since the two Kansas parties, that's where they sign the documents, that's where they need to litigate the documents. It's just not against our public policy in reference to that. To continue, that under the guise of the suit to restrain the foreclosure, they then brought a lender liability suit, and they're seeking $50 million in damages against the public entity, the Kansas Public Retirement Employee System. In their suit, they're alleging fraud. In their suit, they're alleging conspiracy. In their suit, they're alleging a variety of traditional lender liability torts. The statute that we're asking the court to give comity to is the Kansas statute mandatory venue that all actions against the state of Kansas shall be brought in Shawnee County, Texas. We are here on a mandamus after the judge denied... Shawnee County, Kansas. That would kind of move my whole argument, wouldn't it? Yeah. Shawnee County, Kansas. We filed a special appearance based on the principles in the United Mexican States Ashley case that the Supreme Court ruled on a few years ago. We filed also a joint motion to dismiss, asking that the judge take judicial notice of that statute and force the case to be brought there. The court did take judicial notice of the statute, but refused to recognize it after he took judicial notice of the statute. The reason that mandamus, we think, is proper is that we cannot wait until the appeal, because if we come in and counterclaim, we would have a situation where we have waived venue. It's very akin to the National Banking Venue Statute a few years ago. If you recall that the national banks, under the auspices then of federal law, had to be sued in certain venues in certain counties, but the case law definitely showed that if they ventured out and went into other counties to seek enforcement of their case, actually triggering the judicial system, that they waive that. That is why we cannot wait into appeal. Also, we cannot wait into appeal because of the comity issue. If Texas starts disregarding the public policy statutes of Kansas, when Texas has the almost identical statutes, almost identical, for all of its government agencies to be sued in a certain county in Texas, once we do not start recognizing statutes from the state of Kansas, Kansas will not recognize our statutes, and we get into a real problem with cooperative federalism. That is the very issue brought up in the United States Supreme Court case in Nevada versus Hall, which was a personal injury case that is relied on heavily by the opposite side, in our case, the opposing side. And there, the government entity was in a car wreck, and the case was brought in the state of California, who had no immunity whatsoever. And that went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the U.S. Supreme Court says, when you have a situation where one state has waived total immunity and another state has limited immunity, you don't have to give full faith and credit. But on comity grounds, perhaps you should, because of the cooperative federalism that you have. Our case is different than Nevada versus Hall because we don't have conflicting policies. We have identical policies. Identical policies. And we should treat our sister states exactly as we want ourselves to be treated. And we should honor those statutes. In reference to the clear abuse of discretion, I would refer the court again to the Lee versus Miller and McElrath cases and Robinson versus McKnight cases, where the court said, in a situation where the policy is not violated, in a situation where the two systems in the state are identical, it is an abuse of discretion to ignore it. And that's what is happening here, is Judge Rex is ignoring the state law of Kansas in reference to the mandatory venue provision. Again, I think one of the clearest reasons why the statute should be honored and must be honored is the fact that it's really a dispute between Kansas parties. You've got the board of directors, you've got the main officers, the chief executive officers, all living in Kansas. The principal place of business pursuant to the transcript of Hydrogen Energy when the documents were executed, Kansas. The choice of law provision, Kansas. The no payments were made in Kansas. Kansas law is to apply reference interest rate. Kansas law is to apply reference where the payments are. It's just all Kansas.
How would the choice of law provisions work if we were concerned with the priority of liens or foreclosure of liens in Texas? Texas law would apply.
In reference to when you're, again, it goes to that McElrath case, when you're talking about the actual real estate itself, yes, you're right, Your Honor. But when you're talking about transactions between the parties in reference to whether one party is ordered to do certain things, then that's when Kansas law would apply. And that's the distinction.
And let me just clarify, are you saying your client will file a counterclaim, or you're saying your client may file a counterclaim?
If the case remains in Texas, we would have to file it because it's a compulsory counterclaim on the declaratory judgment when you're talking about a note. It is a compulsory counterclaim to file on the indebtedness that's owed under that note. And that's the dilemma we're faced in. We are in the catch-22 situation. We should not be in here. We should not be in Texas. But if we're stuck in Texas, then we've got to file our counterclaim. And if we file our counterclaim under the theory that you have in that federal banking venue statutes, we may have very well lost our venue rights.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The court is ready to hear arguments from respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Ronald Taylor.
Good morning, Your Honors. This is an important case to the citizens of Texas. The question presented in this case is, will our Supreme Court tell a citizen of the state of Texas, Texas Hydrogen Energy Corporation, that its local courts are closed to them when they seek injunctive relief to prevent threatened foreclosure on a citizen's real property located in the state of Texas? Will our Supreme Court surrender jurisdiction to a foreign state agency on the issues involving the title and ownership to our land? Judge Rex thought the local courthouse in Andrews County, Texas, which is less than 10 miles from the disputed property, should be open to the citizens of Texas to protect that land. I don't believe that this court, when it gets this case fully briefed, will reach a different conclusion. I want to go over the facts a little bit. I did provide the court with a players list of people involved. I want to start with Capers. It's a mistake for this court to think that Capers was a passive player in this. Capers directed all the activities of KDF. In fact, KDF was the passive nominal. They're called the nominee partnership. Capers had a representative on the board of directors of KDF, of Texas Hydrogen Energy and Hydrogen Energy. The individual, Mr. Kogler, was a representative of Capers and was their agent. He came to the state of Texas and helped negotiate the deal whereby the assets that were put in Texas Hydrogen Energy Corporation were acquired. In addition to that, Mr. Kogler sat on both boards, both of Hydrogen Energy and Texas Hydrogen Energy. Texas Hydrogen Energy Corporation is a Texas corporation. All the business activity of both corporations are now located in Midland, Texas. The official for securities purposes, Hydrogen Energy is a publicly held company and it has a post office address in Kansas. But Mr. Floyd testified at the hearing that all the business activity of both corporations are in Texas with the headquarters in Midland.
And has been at all times?
No, not at all times. After they formed this subsidiary, all the business activity moved to Texas. And Hydrogen Energy, the parent company, has no business activity other than what's occurring in Texas Hydrogen Energy. To acquire this loan, now, you've got to remember that Capers, they got a guy on the board of directors, they're an equity holder, they own 2.5 million shares of stock, they own debentures, and they loaned the corporation $375,000 to make this acquisition of oil and gas properties. That loan was made, and the security interests were filed, and it's about four pages long, the security interest. It was filed in Andrews County, Texas. It's right here, the financing statement. It's in the record. It was filed of record. And they claim a security interest under the leases and the descriptions, and it's about 6 pages of descriptions of real property in Andrews County, Texas. See the legal description attached to Exhibit B. It's about 6 pages long. We got ready, the company got ready to make a sale of these property to a company called UMC. We made a full tender, a payment of the promissory note, all the accrued interest, everything to Capers. Capers at that time had fired Mr. Coker as the investment advisor. He's under a criminal indictment in Kansas. This is a major public scandal in Kansas right now about the activities of Mr. Coker. As a result of that, Packholder came in the spring of 1991 and refused to release the lien, even upon acceptance or tender of full payment. They said, well, number one, you're going to have to prove to us this is a bona fide transaction. We want to get an appraisal to decide whether or not you're getting a fair value for your property. That delayed the transaction. They entered into a contract with Williams Petroleum Consultants in Dallas, Texas, to go evaluate the property. Now, you've got to remember that this is analogous to a bank. When you're ready to sell your house and you're offering full payment saying, we're not going to release the lien, we want to know if you're getting a good deal on that. And of course, the reason Capers did that is they were an equity holder and they weren't satisfied that maybe we were getting a proper deal. That delayed the transaction. Later, they came up with an idea that we were going to have to pay the interest on the debenture before they would release. But the bottom line is that if the UMC transaction went away, we couldn't make the sale. Mr. Floyd testified that we can't get any bank loans, and they've got our property tied up in Andrews County, Texas. In September of 1991, Mr. Barnhart, on behalf of Packholder, their new designated agent of Capers, wrote a letter saying that they are, the last paragraph, this notice is being provided under the terms of the relevant documents described above, and is sufficient to allow Capers to take all actions allowed by the documents under Kansas or Texas law. Now, based upon those documents, based upon the threat, based upon their actions in refusing to release the lien, even upon tender of full payment, we filed suit in Andrews County, Texas to stop the foreclosure and for damages.
Is Judge Rex going to have to apply Kansas law to the bulk of this, bulk of these claims?
Judge, I don't think so. I think that basically the issue in terms of their refusing to release the lien will be determined under the contracts, and I think that probably, maybe on that issue they will. I don't know that that will be a major factor. They may have to apply on the contract claims. On the tort claims, I don't think so. We have a tortious interference claim. One thing I left out in the notes of the representative of Capers, Ms. Miller, it's in the record. One of the things they were considering, it's in her notes, is they would just kick out the management of Hydrogen Energy and deal directly with the purchases of our assets. So there's evidence in the record that they were just thinking about booting us out completely and stepping into our shoes and making the deal. They own about 30% of the company. And I think it'd be a mistake for this court to think, oh, you know, we've got a passive teacher retirement system and they made an investment in something like a mutual fund and they end up getting sued. That's not what you have here. They were a complete active participant on the board of directors, on 30% of the company. And that's an extremely critical factor in this case.
Does Capers have sovereign immunity under Kansas law?
No, it's the statute, very statute they rely on waives it. And what they're trying to rely on is the venue provision of that. And as we well know, and there are various ways that the court could rule on this, but as we know, a venue is a procedural device and that the forum state applies their own venue statutes.
Isn't sovereign immunity waived only to the extent of the statute and therefore the venue provision?
Well, you could certainly take that position. I think that when we get down to the really bottom line of this case and we apply and look at Nevada versus Hall, the real question is whether, first of all, we know under Nevada versus Hall that this court does not, under the doctrine of full faith and credit, have to recognize your sovereign immunity, that you balance the public policy of this state versus their interest in having the sovereign immunity enforced, and the decision can be made on that basis.
But in the context of cooperative federalism, it's a pretty severe thing not to recognize another state's use of sovereignty.
Let me put it this way, Judge. If the teacher retirement system in this town, and they own buildings all over, has a building up in Kansas, and they start to foreclose on it, I don't think the state of Kansas is going to recognize our sovereign immunity. There's going to be a lawsuit in Kansas over that building, and they're going to hold it in Kansas. When you get to something as fundamental as the soil of the sovereign, I don't think that the courts of the various states are going to cede that jurisdiction to someone. So to me, that is, that, and again, this is a completely commercial transaction. If you look at the authorities...
Excuse me, Mr. Taylor, how do you respond to Mr. Rouse's, I guess, statement is he concedes that if you're going to foreclose, Kansas is going to have to come and take some foreclose. But without foreclosing, without using the Texas foreclosure mechanism for foreclosing, everything else is just litigation over this business deal. And this business deal is a Kansas business deal, and you got a Kansas company that, to be sued in Shawnee. I mean, you're arguing, well, hey, this is the soil. But he relies on McElreeve and said, all we're doing is arguing as between these people who gets to claim title to that soil.
Yeah, well, the problem is, Judge, is that this has clouded our title, and it's part of the record. And we're frozen. That we have to wait until they do something against us. Should a Texas property owner, in the analogy of the homeowner, does he have to wait till the foreign entity decides to foreclose on him? Or can he get his title unclouded and move forward with his business transactions in his life? We can't move. We've been stuck down there for 2 years because of the cloud on our title. Certainly, the citizens of the state of Texas should have the right to get their property unencumbered by a bogus lien without having to wait for somebody to foreclose. I think that's an extremely important right that you be able to clear your title. This case really can be decided on looking at four cases, and they're real simple. The first one is a decision by this court, United Mexican States versus Ashley. And there, this court recognized the doctrine of restrictive immunity. It's real simple. If it's a governmental function and if it involves property within that sovereign's own territory, you apply the sovereign immunity. Ashley held, in that case, where a Texas citizen tried to sue in the state of Texas to recover for expropriation of ranches that he owned in Mexico, sovereign immunity applies. But they recognized the doctrine of restrictive sovereign immunity, and they made an important, crucial distinction. In commercial transactions, and this is strictly a commercial transaction, you are not required to recognize sovereign immunity. And that's the principle upon which this case should be decided. That is, restrictive sovereign immunity is recognized in the United Mexican States case. The next case that you look at, Lee versus Miller, that's the Fifth Circuit case that they rely on. What happened to Lee versus Miller? Joint community civil defense function, helicopter crash in Texarkana. Court says, look, governmental function, this is civil defense. County in Arkansas asserts sovereign immunity. The suit's pending in Texas. We're going to recognize sovereign immunity, Fifth Circuit case. Case that we rely on, the Board of Commissioners versus Amarillo Hospital case, Amarillo County, Texas Hospital, guy transported over to Amarillo to get medical services, Oklahoma County refuses to pay their bill, Court of Appeal says, no, you're going to pay your bill. Sovereign immunity does not shield you from that type of liability. Again, critical cutting-edge factor in this case was the commercial nature of Capers activity, where they are not entitled to blanket sovereign immunity. And that's what this court recognized and defined in the Mexican States versus Ashley case. Again, the last case that you really need to look at in terms of disposing of this case is Nevada versus Hall. Employee of the state of Nevada goes over and has an automobile accident in California. California resident sued, Nevada police, limited form of immunity, was shielded $25,000 is all you can recover. Goes to the Supreme Court of California. They say, no, we're not going to recognize the sovereign immunity here. We have our own public policy, and our public policy says you have an unlimited liability. Goes to the U.S. Supreme Court. Supreme Court rules, one, full faith and credit does not require that you recognize sovereign immunity, that each state is its own sovereign, and each state will decide under what circumstances and how far immunity will apply. And held that California could, despite Nevada's assertion of that shield, required them to go ahead and play by the rules of California and pay the judgment to the tune of $1,500,000. And I submit to you that in this case, where it's such a clearly commercial transaction, that should be the rule in this case. In terms of the mandamus aspect, and I know this court has considered another case on mandamus, the way I reconcile this case, which in my opinion should not have been a proper subject for mandamus, we filed this lawsuit 2 years ago. We've taken 8 depositions. We're way down the discovery track. were set for trial on February 21st of this year. This case, since there was not a concern,
this next year, right,
60 days. This case, if they wanted a mandamus, they should have compelled the court to hear it sooner. They should have filed something to get it determined. We're way too far down the road to be considering a record of this volume with the trial setting 60 days away. They did not push for a trial setting. They drug their feet and went through all this discovery, and now we probably may have delayed this trial. At United Mexican States was granted on mandamus on the sovereign immunity issue, and you could distinguish that case by saying, in that case, it was a true sovereign immunity claim, not a restrictive immunity claim. Here, when there's commercial activity in a purely commercial situation, mandamus should be considered just as it would for any other party, and I guess this court's going to have to decide, is mandamus the proper method of challenging jurisdiction?
Does Kansas make any of the distinctions you're making with regard to the applicability of sovereign immunity for proprietary versus governmental functions like we might in Texas?
I don't know, other than, of course, they've got the limited waiver, which indicates that they're waiving it for some reason. I would suggest that waiver of immunity is because they are involved in commercial activities. Office buildings in this town are owned by retirement systems. You know, we've handled it. It's common knowledge. We handle the foreclosure of them. We don't go to Ohio for the teacher retirement system of Ohio to foreclose on one of these office buildings in downtown. You go to the state of Texas. And I don't think that you're required to wait until they initiate the foreclosure proceedings. What if you're in a situation where the teacher retirement system of Ohio has a lien out here and they refuse to release it? I mean, that can cause you as much damage, and you would not want to close the courthouse door simply because, you know, they haven't sued you yet. The damage is very compelling when you can't move in a business sense and sell your property, move your property, or do anything with your property.
Do you agree that if they bring a counterclaim or cross claims, they will have waived their right to the claim that they're entitled to sue in Kansas?
Yes, I do agree with that. And I don't think they're entitled to be sued in Kansas.
Doesn't that make mandamus their only relief?
Well, I mean, okay, I see where you're headed. Well, no, it isn't, because if they're right and there's no jurisdiction, then this case is going to go up on appeal and there was no jurisdiction. Oh, I see. But you're saying waived it by filing the counterclaim, they would invoke the court's jurisdiction to decide that issue. You know, I hadn't really thought about that. I think this court could certainly take the position under those circumstances that wasn't a knowing waiver of a right. In other words, the hostile choice of asserting that. They could take the position. We had to do it. We had no choice.
Your clients would probably claim their waiver.
And what they could do is they could simply not assert that claim, go up on appeal if they're right, and then go to Kansas. But I understand that point. Yeah, I think there is a waiver problem there.
So that makes mandamus look like pretty much the only remedy they have.
From that standpoint, I think you're right. I think We go back, and this is just a fundamental policy issue, and I don't think that this court wants to tell. And again, I mean, they keep talking about all this happening in Kansas. There is a Texas corporation involved here. It owns this property. It's operating oil wells out in Andrews County, Texas. And I don't see how this court could write an opinion that would deny a Texas debtor the right to go to court to try to clear his property.
If they release the liens, hypothetically, would it make a difference?
If they come in and release the liens?
Then would you have to go to Kansas?
Certainly make the better case for them. I mean, this is our best point. I think if you look at this strictly from a minimum contact standpoint, there's more than enough contacts here for any type of jurisdiction, be whether in rem or otherwise. But yeah, if they release their liens, it might be a different situation. They haven't released their liens. I guess I will just close by saying that in Nevada versus Hall, they held that the rights of people on the California highways outweigh the interest of Nevada in their sovereign immunity statute. And I would just close by saying that the rights of citizens to their land is more important and more fundamental than providing protection to people on the highways. I urge this court to not surrender our court's jurisdiction over the land to Kansas. Do not require our citizens to go to Kansas to assert their property rights. Do not close the courthouse door in Andrews County, Texas on foreclosure day. We have a trial setting on February 21st. I really believe that this case can be decided by reading those four cases. That's Ashley versus United Mexican States, the Amarillo Hospital case, and Lee versus Miller, and Nevada versus Hall. And it's really just that simple. Does this court want to close the courthouse? Does this court want to close the local courthouse on the first Tuesday of every month to the citizens of its state for their own property?
And do you agree that Texas has statutes very similar to this Kansas statute?
There are statutes similar for the retirement system.
You believe that they're like the Kansas statutes, overly broad, and that they would not be applied by other states?
I know this. We cited a New York case where New York refused to apply the Texas statute, and it's in our brief.
That's the only case, I guess, other than Colorado.
That's the only case that we're aware of. Again, let's look at this in reality. Do we really believe that Kansas would make a citizen go to Texas to protect their property rights? I don't think that policy argument of this sister state really has a lot of validity. The judges of the state, and by the way, the judges in Kansas subscribe to this retirement system, and we're not really just about taking our case to Kansas, but the reality of the situation is that our judges of this state, we elect the judges in our system, and we have that system to protect us. And this is a situation where we want that protection, and the citizens deserve that protection. We pray that this court deny the writ of mandamus, and if the law needs straightening out at this point, we urge that you straighten it out. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
In rebuttal, Your Honors. First of all, reference his issue that the venue is a procedural right. The Texas case law even handled that issue for us. It specifically states in several cases that a state can limit where and when and how it is sued, and it has done so in the Prairie A&M case that basically said that if a venue statute prescribes that's where the state to be sued, well, that's where it's to be sued. So it's really not a procedural issue. This is really not an issue whether Texas can exercise jurisdiction. It's whether it should under the principles of comity. And the Nevada versus Hall case that he mentions, it's a wonderful case because it specifically limits that case holding to a state that had waived total immunity, comparing it with a state that had not. It did not handle an issue where both states had identical laws. It just did not handle it. And it also put in there that even in a case where one has waived and one hasn't, that really under comity, the state under cooperative federalism should look at it. The cooperative federalism issues also mentioned that Lee versus Miller case that he just cited. We've got a case where what other function could a retirement system have other than to invest monies to pay its employees? That's the function that it has.
Does Texas public employee retirement system invest out of state in ventures similar to this?
Yes, sir. It's got an identical custodian requirement. It's got investment advisors, the whole shebang. It really does. And that's what we're getting into on this cooperative federalism. We're talking about, in essence, a brawl or a free-for-all if states start ignoring each other. And that is not what the United States Supreme Court had in mind on that Nevada versus Hall. That was a car wreck tort case in which, car wrecks happen periodically. We're talking about retirement systems that invest billions of dollars throughout the country. The case he mentions on New York, Texas went in there trying to ask New York to give us comity. So we know what Texas you want because you see it there in Texas. You see it when they go to Colorado. They want the other states to honor our law. In New York, they answered it, well, we are the hotbed of commercial transactions, and therefore only New York can really decide this. That's how New York handled it. I think that decision is flat wrong. and they treated Texas wrong. But that doesn't mean that Texas should treat Kansas wrong. And so we're asking that the court find that there was a clear abuse of discretion, that the Kansas statute be honored, comity be given, and this case be brought in the state of Kansas.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument on the first call. The court will now take a brief recess.